This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. And thank you to everyone listening tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides assistance to the disabled riders who have given everything to the sport. If you are able to help, please visit the website www.pdjf.org. Now, tonight, we are joined by a young rider. He's only been riding for 2 years, but he's already had a mount in the Breeders' Cup, a graded stakes victory. He has 175 wins and over $4 million in earnings. Nick Juarez, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Christina. It's a pleasure to be here.
So great to have you here on the show, Nick. If people pay attention much at all, they see what a rising star you are in the saddle, and you've been making headlines your entire career, your very short career. But actually, Nick, I want to start off the show with talking about a very recent headline I just read about the Gulfstream Park Handicap that just ran on Saturday, March 5th. Tell us the story about what happened there.
Well, I mean, going into the race, I knew Valid had a really good shot to win it. I don't know how to put it into words, but we were coming to the stretch drive, and Valid and I, we were drifting out. You know, he's just making his run. He's a big horse, big heavy horse. I know him well. You got to kind of work on him to get him to switch his lead. And so we were drifting a little bit just so we could make our move on the outside of Lozano. And Lozano kind of drifted out to us, and he might have just drifted a little too much, and it was, wrong place, wrong time. Valid missed the, he got bumped, he missed a step, he stumbled really, really badly, I was just trying to, once he stumbled, he recovered himself. I'm really surprised he could recover himself that well. I kind of felt him out for a second, see if he was okay. He was okay. I lost my left iron, and, just went back to work. Yeah, the two horse came to us. It's a knockout. And if you watch, I mean, we kind of go off screen, but Valid is head and head with It's a Knockout. And once I recovered himself, he felt like he was okay. I went back to the left hand, and he drew away again. He still ended up beating It's a Knockout by a length. And that just goes to show you how much of a powerful horse he is. And I really think if that wouldn't have happened, we definitely would have won the Grade 2 Gulfstream Park Handicap. But things happen. It's horse racing, and I'm just fortunate that Val's okay. He's safe. He's sound. I'm okay. So we live to fight another day.
Wow! Thank God. Thank God. Everyone came out of the race
definitely.
Okay, for sure. And what's next for Valid? Do you know?
I'm not too sure yet. You know, right now, I mean, after that race, you know, just gonna give him a little. I think gonna give him some time. Not really sure. Marcus Vitale, the trainer for him, you know, he kind of keeps everything pretty private. Usually we don't find out we're running until the day of the entry. So,
wow.
He's a private guy, and I respect that. That'll be between him and Carl Saverfond, Miss Carolyn Vogel. So, I don't know about that yet.
And of course, Marcus Vitali is the trainer of the very successful Valid. And I know I know Marcus very well, Nick, when I rode back in the day at Suffolk Downs. I rode many times for Marcus Vitali, and he is quite the character. And tell us about your relationship with him.
Oh, man, Marcus is great. Seriously, I was in Monmouth Park last year. I started in Monmouth Park 2014, slow start. But people really, they really gave me a shot there. Ended up being leading apprentice rider in 2014 Monmouth. And it was like the last day there. I went down in the race. I was out for about like 7 months. Then the following year, 2015, last year, I went back to Monmouth. And right away, started picking my business back up. And, people there are pretty loyal. And, I love Monmouth Park. And so I lost my apprenticeship August 26th. But going into, it was like a couple months, June. Actually, it was May. So it was like May. We were at like a Preakness party type thing. They had it at the Horseshoe Casino in Maryland before the Preakness. And I ran into Marcus, and I never spoke with him. So I saw Jay rushing, and I knew Jay. So we sat and we talked a little bit, and he was eating, and I was talking about my bug. I said, "Oh yeah, I lose my bug August 26th." And I'm sure you've heard it 100 times with apprentice riders. We're very nervous about losing the bug. As much as we don't want to say we're nervous about it. And he stopped eating and everything, and he says, "Nick," he goes, Why do you put so much pressure on yourself about, the apprenticeship? Why do you put so much pressure by yourself about the bug?" He goes, "I hate that agents, trainers and stuff like that, and other jockeys and yourself," because "you put so much pressure on yourself when you lose the bug." He goes, "What bug are you right now?" "So I'm a 5-pound bug." And he goes, "Okay, so in a couple months from now, when you have to be 5 pounds more than everybody on paper, are you gonna ride any different?" I said, "No." He goes, "I hope I'll ride better. Are you still going to ride confident?" I said, "Yes." He said, "So then don't worry about it." And at that point, I realized, I said, "You know what? He's right. Just ride hard and ride well. That's all." And so we got to the summer in Jersey, and I was working for him in the morning and stuff like that. And Jay didn't have my book at the time, so I didn't really ride much for Marcus. But it was right when I lost my bug, August 26th, and 3 days later he put me in the Island Stakes, the Grade 3 Stakes in Monmouth, which is a very prestigious race up there, and he put me on Valid, and he gave me a big opportunity. Like I said, I just lost my bug, and it's very hard to carry over your success as an apprentice to a journeyman, and for Marcus to give me that chance, it was incredible. And I think, I owe a lot of credit to him that, where my career is today is because of him. And, going forward, I think that's what's going to carry me and make a name for myself in this business. So I thank him for that.
What a great story, Nick. And like you said, very few apprentice riders get an opportunity to ride, much less win, a graded stakes race immediately after losing their bug or their apprenticeship. And you described in some detail what that means. And that is there's so much pressure, like you said, when a rider loses their bug, there's so much pressure to continue to do well. And oftentimes many riders do not, because trainers think that that is so important to take advantage of the weight. And do you feel like that's important? Do you feel like bug riders have such an advantage as far as getting weight off?
I wouldn't say it's just an advantage. At the time, obviously, I got to sell my own product. But some horses need it and some horses don't. But, it's nice for an apprentice because, when I was an apprentice they don't have as much experience. I don't have as much experience. Just because I'm not an apprentice anymore doesn't mean I don't have the same experience as, Johnny V and Javier and stuff like that. It's still hard, but, to have that product to sell, say, "Hey, I get a couple pounds off, give me a shot." And that's how you develop those type of relationships with those trainers. I think that's the main thing is, developing a relationship with the trainers, getting the job done when you have the opportunity and make the most out of it.
Was that your first time sitting on Valid aboard that victory?
No. My first time as a race.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my first time to ride him in a race. But my first time ever sitting on him, no. He's a really cool horse. I mean, like I said, I was working for Marks in the morning, just plugging away because I knew my bug was, you know, about to end, and I really needed somebody to, you know, help me out. And so, I kind of devoted a lot of time in the morning to going to him and seeing him. And although I wasn't riding for him, and, you know, some people would look and say, oh, you know, they would laugh and say, hey, are you going to walk his horse? You know, you're going to cool the horse out too. And I say, yep, yeah, I gotta do pulls at 10:30. You know, just joke around, but you know, because everybody saw me working hard, and you know, I wasn't getting anywhere with them at that time. They saw, but you know, definitely laid some groundwork, and I knew that he was gonna, help me out, and he did so, and I don't regret it at all. And like I said, getting all out in the morning, he's a pretty cool horse. You know, he does his own thing. You know, he gets out there, he looks around, and, you know, you can't rush him. You try to move him, he's not going to move until, you know, he's ready to train. And he looks around and takes a big breath and says, all right, let's go. He's just a professional.
That's awesome. Is he the same way to ride in the race? You have to kind of wait on him when he's ready to make his move?
Not really, you know. I found with him, like, I watched replays and stuff like that before I rode him, and, you know, he was kind of rushed a lot, and, you know, he can go anything. He can go 21:45 or 22:45, 23:47, wherever you want him to be. You know, he's going to run. He's a fighter. But I kind of, like, realized, you know, right in the ice line, I said, man, if I just throw his head away, or when I gallop him in the morning, he can get really tough if you want him to get tough. But you kind of throw his head away, he relaxes. And, you know, I kind of found, like, an easy way to ride him. And the same thing in the ice line, the way I rode him in the Breeders' Cup, and the way I rode him in the Don Handicap, the way I rode him in the Gulfstream Park Handicap, you know, the Down Handicap, everybody thought we were going to go to the lead, you know, and he doesn't have to be there. You know, he likes to target, and to get him to relax, that's the main thing. You know, I just talk to him while we run, and it's easy, relax, and when we're ready to make a move, we make a move, and he kicks in, and he doesn't stop. So he's my favorite horse to ride, definitely.
It's so nice to get those classy horses that will listen, and they don't have to be in any particular spot. They'll listen to you.
Yep, you got that right.
That makes sure.
You don't find them all like that.
No, not at all. That makes your job a lot easier, for sure.
That's right.
So you mentioned the Breeders' Cup, and I remember, I can't remember exactly where I was, but I read the headlines, Nick. And I know you from when I was in Maryland. And when I heard that you were coming to the Breeders' Cup a couple months after you lost your bug, I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever heard. And describe the excitement around all of that. And when you found out, describe that to us.
Man, it was, like I said, it was so much hype around it. And it was really, really cool. You know, I just lost my bug 2 months prior, and to go there was such a blessing, and like I said, I'm really thankful to, you know, Carolyn Vogel and Marks again. You know, like, not many people can do that ever in their life, and to go there as such a young young rider was a great experience. You know, got to meet a lot of great people, got to ride with great riders, and just the whole thing surrounding the experience. You know, I got my local. I live in like Carroll County, Maryland. I guess where I'm originally from. You know, we have a small paper, and so for them to, you know, contact, oh, we want to do an article on you. You know, that was really cool just to say, like, you know, I wrestled in high school in Carroll County, so they said, oh, Nick Juarez went from the mats to the stables, and, you know, they wrote a really good piece about it, and it was just it was an unforgettable experience, and I can't wait to go back again and, you know, actually be able to win it next time, so I'm excited.
Describe the race, Nick, the Breeders' Cup.
The race?
Yes.
Well, you know, I rode in Maryland, I rode in Monmouth, and I've ridden a couple other places. You know, I never really got to ride with those type of caliber riders all at once and with those caliber horses. I mean, I remember just the morning of, I went to go see Bowden, like, you look to the stall to the left, you look to the stall to the right, you look to all these barns on the backside where all these Breeders' Cup horses are, and you're like, wow, like, this is, it's like walking into, like, a luxury car lot, you know what I mean? It's like, wow, like, all these cars and all these horses that, you know, they have achieved so much, and you're right there in the midst of it. And so in the race, you know, it was almost how like a quarterback describes how he sits in the pocket and he's reading defense, he's reading the line, he's reading his running back, or he's reading his wide receivers, his tight end, and stuff like that. Same thing in the race. I mean, everything, when I look back on it, everything was like in slow motion. You know, you can see everything unfolding in the race and when to make a move. And, I remember Leon's nap, you know, he kind of got left at the gate, and that was the one we thought he was going to be in the front. You know, so the two horsemen, Silas Gano, Bravo, they tried to, you know, box him in a little bit, and they did so, you know, gave him as bad trip as they could, you know, just the, you know, race riding, you know, everybody's trying to win the race. And I remember, you know, Leon's match takes a hold, he gets out of there, he looks for a way to get out, Santana came up next to him, and I'm trying to keep Santana next to you know, everything to keep Leon's map boxed in, and Santana's horse got out of there. Leon's map comes out, and you know, the rest is history. You know, Leon's map won the race, but there was a lot of strategy in the race, and to see those type of riders and those type of horses running like that, like I said, it's almost like being a quarterback in the pocket. You know, you get to watch everything unfold, and you know, looking back on it, it's definitely a huge learning experience. And that's when I knew, I said, I got to go somewhere where I'm going to learn. Where I'm going to learn the way these riders ride, and you know, ride these type of horses every day or every chance I get, because this is where I want to be every year, and I want to win this, and I want to be, I want to leave a big name, you know, in the business, and that's when I decided to come here to Gulfstream.
And of course, Valid ended up running fifth in that Grade One $1 million Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile here at Keeneland. Nick, were you nervous before the race?
To be honest, yes. I was pretty nervous. But like I said, I mean, you look around the room and I see Johnny Velasquez, and I see Javier, I see Joe Rosario, I see Jordan LaPerue, I see Joe Bravo, I see Corey Lander, I see all these great riders, and they're cool as a cucumber. I mean, they're really, you know, it's like another day at the office for them. So I'm like, you know what? I said, why am I going to be so nervous? I know I'm just, you know, basically like a kid in the business. I said, but, you know, why am I going to be so nervous? And it kind of reminded me back to when I rode, you know, Val the first time in the Grade Three. I was nervous. I mean, I just lost my bug. I got this big opportunity. I better make the most of it. And I'm in the post parade, and Val is cool as a cucumber. So I'm like, you know what? Why am I even going to be nervous? This horse has done it with or without me, and he's going to do it with or without me again, you know? So there's no reason to be nervous. And when I saw those guys in the room in the Breeders' Cup, I said, there's no reason to be nervous. You know, it's just, this is my job. You know, this is what Marcus entrusted me to do my job to the best of my ability. And I said, it's time to go to work.
If you had said no, Nick, I would have said you were lying. But that's, in my opinion, that's what makes great riders, is the fact that they can take that incredible amount of pressure that's put on them, and they perform even better under that kind of pressure. And obviously, Nick, you're well on your way to showing everyone that you can do that. And having been in the jocks room for these big races and being surrounded by such great jockeys, who's your idol? Who do you look up to the most?
I would definitely it's between two. It's kind of hard to say. But I would definitely have to say between three almost. But Joe Bravo, I saw him a lot in Monmouth Park, and so, you know, and growing up watching him and stuff like that, you know, he's definitely an idol. You know, somebody's won 5,000 races and he's humble and everything else. He's a great person. You know, fun to be around, joke around, and you know, he's a good guy. And then here in Gulfstream, then I got to see, you know, Johnny V and Javier, and I mean Javier, like, I mean, it's just all of that is business, you know, no joking around, you know. I mean, he jokes around, but, you know, reading his program, you know, handicaps everything, he's very very keen. I mean, he writes, like, he has a bunch of good stuff to do, you know, and I watch him, and my corner's right next to him, you know, to watch these type of riders. I watch and learn, and I said, you know, one day I'm going to be like these guys, and, you know, shortly I will be like them. And they have, they're just, I don't know, they're just all class, you know. You win a race, you know, they come in second, they still come back and say, hey, congratulations, kid. Or, you know, you tell them, congratulations, oh, thank you very much. Or they come in the room, good morning, everybody, how's it going? You know, they're just all class, you know, all class.
Jockey Nick Juarez joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nick, you talk about you rode at the Breeders' Cup. You decided it was time to step up and really kind of make your mark and go to a big track. And you started in Maryland, and you're actually from Maryland, and your family's from Maryland, and your family's in the industry. So let's talk about, Nick, let's talk about how you got involved with the sport. And when was the day that you first decided you wanted to become a jockey?
For any, my dad was a jockey in Maryland. You know, my grandfather was a steeplechase jockey when he was younger. I knew him when he was an outrider in Maryland for 30-some years. My parents, they met on the racetrack. My mom's a nurse now, but she was a pony girl who liked, you know, ponies, the jockey to the gate. And that's how she met my father. So growing up, when you're a kid, being a jockey son, you definitely go like, man, I want to ride. But, you know, it's not an easy life now that I'm here. You know, we talk about my success, but at the same time, it wasn't easy to get there. So my dad, you know, he never really wanted me to ride races. He's like, people would say, oh, is Nicky going to be a rider? Is he going to be a jock? And my dad always would tell him, no, he's going to go to college. And going forward, I guess, fast forward a few years, I wrestled in high school. I kind of always knew how to, you know, watch my weight and stuff like that and maintain a good weight. And you know, I was always very athletic, played football, wrestling, lacrosse, soccer, anything you can name I played. And then when I graduated high school, went to college, but I'm like, man, you know, you look around now at this day and age, and it used to be like, oh, you graduate high school, you know, you're good to go. Oh, you graduate, you know, 2 years of college, get your associate's, you're well set. You know, now it's, you got to get your bachelor's, you got to get your master's, you got to have so much time in school. I had older friends that were graduating college, and, you know, they got, you know, student loans and everything else. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what, I'm not growing anymore, so, and I'm pretty little, so I said, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to try to ride races. So I approached my dad one day. In the meantime, I was walking hot in the morning, you know, I was a hot walker, and, you know, my dad, I woke up one morning and I said, Dad, I think I want to ride. He said, are you serious? And I said, yep. So I was at the time, I was like 140 pounds. So it wasn't good.
Oh, you know? Wow.
Yeah, I was like 145 at one time and I was like 140. You know, I just always, you know, I like to lift and stuff like that. But anyway, so my dad sent me to a farm in Montauk, Maryland. Oh, no, Montauk. Oh, my gosh. Moncton, Maryland. Billy Santoro. And, you know, he helped me out. And I was there for a couple months. And then I said I was ready to go on the racetrack. So I went to the racetrack, got my first job with Mary Epler, who's a trainer for Paige McKinney. And my dad still works for, you know, freelances for. And anyway, so I started working there, and then it just kept carrying on. And I said, you know what, I got to focus on, you know, being a rider. And one thing led to another, and I guess December 2013, my dad put me on my first horse, and we won 2013 in Laurel Park. So it was a big day. And you know, I'm not going to say it's all been success since there, because it's a very, very hard business, and I didn't get all the opportunities. You know, when I was in Maryland, that's why I sought elsewhere.
So, Nick, I'm so curious. I had no idea you were once 145 pounds. I thought, looking at your size now, you know, he doesn't struggle too bad with his weight, surely. But, wow, that's incredible. How did you lose the weight?
Well, okay, so the guy, Mark Johnson, Mark Rosenthal. He was galloping for John Robert at the time, and he told me, he said, Nick, you know, the best way to do it is, like, you know, it's going to be turn that muscle into fat. So, you know, whatever you're doing, lifting, anything like that, you know, just try to cut it all out. He's like, and even running, anything like that, just for right now, just cut it all out. I said, okay. So that's what I did. I turned it into fat. I just pretty much, I mean, it sucked, because I'm always very active, so I kind of, like, just sat around, just let it all just, you know, pretty much become fat, and then once it became fat, boom, I got rid of it. I mean, it's not like it all became 145 pounds of fat, but I'm not going to say that. But, you know, it slimmed down, you know, it's like 120, and then I said, all right, now it's time to start running, and started running, and you know, going to like, you know, I was a graduate from high school, but I would go to wrestling practice and stuff like that at my high school to help my coach out and, you know, doing that kind of stuff. You lose weight pretty quick. So, you know, just lost the weight just gradually. You know what I mean? I wasn't in any rush.
Well, and that's the hardest thing, Nick. I was in a similar situation. I was 125 when I wanted to ride, and so I had to, you know, I had to be down to about 105. I had too much muscle, and muscle is the hardest thing to lose. So that requires an incredible amount of dedication. Wow.
Not only that, I guess another thing is, though, because I got myself down to about 115, and then I was fortunate enough to unfortunately break my leg and ankle in the morning. It was in the morning train. Like I said, it's not easy business. So I was in the morning, and I was flipped on my leg. It flipped, landed on my leg. I broke my leg. I broke my ankle, and I was laid up on the couch. And once I was laid up on the couch, I said, "Oh, you know, this is the perfect time to lose weight." So I lost like muscle mass and stuff like that. So once I did get back to riding, I mean, getting back to, like, you know, getting active and stuff like that, then I started eating really, really good, eating clean and everything. And I lost a lot of the weight with breaking my leg.
A blessing in disguise. We'll continue our visit with jockey Nick Juarez after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to California, where Rafael Bejarano had a great week. He won the Grade 1 Santa Margarita aboard Terra's Tango and the Grade 3 Las Flores aboard Fantastic Style. He was the second leading rider in total earnings for the week and won 26% of his mounts. Bejarano consistently came in the money on 70% of his mounts and finished the week with 6 wins, 7 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Manuel Franco had a great week up in New York at Aqueduct as he won the Correction Stakes aboard Close Fall Off. He won 23% of his mounts and finished the week with 7 wins, 5 seconds, and 2 third-place finishes. Finally, our Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Martin Garcia, won 2 stakes at Sunland Park on Sunday after winning the Grade 2 Rebel Stakes aboard Cupid at Oaklawn on Saturday. He was the leading rider in total earnings for the week and the leading rider in stakes earnings for the week. Garcia impressively won 57% of his mounts and finished the week with 4 wins, 1 second, and 1 third-place finish for earnings of $881,000.
Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is now available in a digital version formatted for your ebook reader, complete with live links to videos of key races featured in the text. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter @JockeyTalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Matterhorn on the outside, hard-ridden in fourth. At the rail, Albano, Matru is last, and Valid means business today as he turns for home. Braidster fully extended, trying to get to him, but Valid opens up a length with an eighth of a mile to run. Braidster is in second. Matterhorn on the outside, third. Then Albano coming back for more. A 16th to run, and it is Valid in a stellar performance. He's just cruising through the stretch, and Valid wins the Island. Braidster was second. Matterhorn third. Albano finished fourth.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigal here, joined tonight by jockey Nick Juarez, and we just heard the replay of Nick's victory aboard Valid in the Grade 3 Phillip Island Stakes at Monmouth Park this past year. And Nick, we already talked about that incredible race and where Valid has taken you, and just what an incredible story you have. And now we're talking about how it all started. And we were talking before the break about how you lost the weight, which, as I know, is not very easy to do. And Nick, you won your first race aboard a horse by the name of Love Heart, if I remember correctly. And yep. That was what date? What date was that?
December 14th, 2013.
December 14th, 2013. Yep. And what do you remember about that race?
It was snowing a lot. You try to watch. If you watch the replay, you can't see very much. It was snowing pretty heavily. But it was. It all happened so fast. You know, I was green. I kind of missed the break a little bit, and you know, I kind of took her to the outside, and you know, coming to the stretch, you kind of see. Definitely wasn't a 10-pound apprentice. Trying to finish the race, and I'm lucky she was much the best in the race, and we won. And afterwards, you know, you got your whole the tradition of getting mustard and eggs thrown on you and all the other good stuff. And it was pretty cold in December, so it wasn't very enjoyable.
I'm pretty sure I was one of those people, Nick.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm sorry.
I couldn't see anything. I had mustard and eggs. Hot sauce. I don't know what else was getting thrown on me, so I couldn't see a thing.
But it was something you will never forget. I know that. Certainly. Now, we talked about your father actually was a jockey, and Calixto Juarez, and you had to see kind of what he went through during his career. How long did he ride for?
I think he rode like 88 or something like that when he started to 2010. But you know, with injuries and everything else, like 2009, that was the last time he really got hurt. He got run over. He got dropped and then run over in Penn National. That was in March of 2009, I believe. I think it was March 2009. He went down. He got run over, broke L2, L3. Vertebrae in his back, broke some ribs, had internal bleeding, all sorts of stuff. He came back and he rode like 20 more races, and he said, that's it. I can't do it anymore. And like I said, it's not an easy business, you know. He had a lot of injuries, and broken collarbones, both sides, 5 pieces on one, 3 pieces on the other, ribs, nose, arms, back, ribs. Like, I don't know if I said ribs yet, but ribs. He went through a lot of injuries, and, you know, my dad was never the most successful jockey where he's winning, you know, huge stakes and stuff like that. But, no matter what, he was my biggest hero. He stuck by me no matter what. He never left me. He worked his tail off just to make a living for us. I mean, I remember going to work with him in the mornings, and he would go and he would gallop in the morning. And after we're done galloping in the morning, you know, we'd go to the farm. Chance Meadows Farm in Maryland. He would gallop, you know, however many horses there, and then he's got to go ride like one race in Laurel, and he's calling for Russian. He's calling the third scale, and, oh, I'm on my way. You know, my dad ran around all day, you know, from before the sun came up. So, and then we would go home, and we lived on a farm. You know, I grew up, I raised cows and chickens and pigs, and, ducks, dogs, everything. I had everything when I grew up, and my dad worked his butt off to give me all that. And when we came home, there was still work to be done at the farm, so my dad did that too.
Wow.
And you know, like I said, he was never the most successful person in this business, but he's my biggest hero. And you know, he worked very, very hard to give me the life that I had.
Nick, did you ever get to spend time with him in the jocks room when you were young?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I was. I remember when I was a kid. I mean, there were so many kids in the jocks room. Everybody running around, and I was always very, very quiet, which is different now because I'm pretty outspoken.
That's not you now,
but
Nick.
but I was always the quiet one in the jocks room. They'd always joke around, and they always like, "Oh, Nick, we're gonna put tape on your mouth and being too loud." You know, just being sarcastic. And I was always very quiet, but to watch my dad in the room and you know his you know what he did and. You know, to get ready for races and stuff like that. You know, I definitely spent a lot of time in the room. And when I was a kid, I was like, man, horse racing, this is a life, you know what I mean? I mean, man, this is awesome. You know, I thought it was a bee's knees, you know. I said, whenever I grew up, I said, this is what I want to do just because, you know, it looked like a, you know, real, like a glamorous lifestyle.
But then you saw what your father went through with injuries, and he didn't even really want you to ride. And Nick, you gave us the list of his injuries. My gosh, it's a very, very long list. What injuries have you acquired along the years?
I've only really had two bad injuries. Not bad, but, you know, I broke my leg, my left fibula, my left ankle. You know, got that all taken care of, had screws in there. And then I went down, that was 2013 that happened, then I was in 2014, and it was, like I said, the last day to meet Mama, and my last race, it was going to be the last race anyway, and going into the turn, somebody got dropped at the gate, and this loose horse was kind of causing a little bit of trouble, and we're going to Mile 70 or Mile 16 in Monmouth Park, so we're going into the first turn, and things got a little tight, and my horse kind of like flip heels sideways with somebody. And I went down, I took out another rider. He was okay. I went down, and I felt like my hip was just, something happened. And it felt like I broke my leg again, but it was my hip, so it felt like I broke my hip. Mm-hmm. And I went to the hospital. Everything's fine. They told me no x-rays, everything's good. I asked for MRIs. I had to wait until I got back to Maryland to get an MRI. I got an MRI, and I found out I tore my gluteus maximus, my butt muscle, and bassus lateralis, which is the muscle that runs up the side of your thigh where it attaches to my hip. I tore that, so I was like, that's the reason why I can't move my leg. And, you know, I went through physical therapy for that. In the meantime, I got the screws taken out of my leg. Went through all my physical therapy, and, you know, I feel great now. And since then, I've been very fortunate that I haven't had any more injuries. You know, so... luckily, I haven't had as many as my dad, for sure. But, you know, it's a tough business, and, you know, you just try to stay healthy and try to take care of yourself, especially, you know, health-wise, eating and everything like that. You know, you got to make sure, you know, if you do go down, you know, if you're eating good and you're eating well, you know, you have, you know, strong bone density and stuff like that, you know, hopefully you can be able to take a little more of a hit. You know, I try to keep my nutrition as best I can.
What do you eat, Nick? What's your daily, I guess, menu?
Well, okay, so I guess, I mean, I can't really, like, I guess, I don't know, advertise what I mean, but I use Advocare a lot, which is, like, I know they're, like, a sponsor for, like, Major League Soccer now and stuff like that, but, yeah, they're really, really good. I do, like, a cleanse, like, three times a year with them. You know, then I do, like, a 24-day program. It's, like, a metabolic nutrition system. Gets my body back on track, keeps my body on track. In the morning, oatmeal, chia seeds, a little bit of fruit in it, just lots of water, go to work, you know, after I'm done, you know, working horses and stuff like that, making my rounds, you know, eat some fruit. That carries me over to the afternoon, you know, eat a little bit of something for lunch. You know, I usually like to pack something for the kitchen, for the jock's room, because, you know, in the jock's room kitchen, you're not going to find, like a good salad or something like that, but, you know, usually pack something or like a granola bar or something like that. Just, you know, I don't eat very much when I ride. I usually just drink lots of fluids, and Advocare has, like, stuff for that, you know, like Spark and stuff like that. It keeps me energized. So it has all my vitamins. So I just drink that while I ride. And then for dinner, it's always usually, you know, chicken or seafood, you know, something easy on the digestive system, and, you know, just keep it light, keep it healthy, and try to stop eating before around like 7 o'clock. And that way, you know, your metabolism can work throughout the night, and you know, you keep the weight off pretty easy.
You're doing it the right way, Nick. And like you said, when those injuries do occur, it's so much better to be healthy and have a good immune system and everything else that goes along with that. Do you have to hit the hot box?
No, I mean, I like to you know, do a shaving and stuff like that. But, I mean, like, what's it called? Like, when I had the bugs, you know, you definitely have to, you know, you have to be a lot lighter, you know. And I did have to use the box. But here, you know, in Gulf Stream, since I've been here for some reason, I've been really light going to the, you know, I guess, it's all, I don't know. I feel like it's a mind over matter type thing, because when I lost the bug, I was heavier with the bug than I am without it. It's kind of weird because, you know, you got to just be lighter, and I would reduce every day when I had the bug. And then, you know, once I lost the bug, you know, I've actually been a lot lighter. And since I've been down here in Gulf Stream, you know, it's a lot warmer, plenty of things to do. I feel like I'm in Maryland where it's snowing, and I come home from work and I eat, and, you know, all you do is sit on the couch. You know, here I can eat, and, you know, I bicycle to go get something to eat, or, you know, bicycle to the grocery store. I got plenty of Snapchats of me bicycling to the grocery store.
Well, and Nick, like you said, I mean, when you had a tough time with the bug, and just 5 pounds, when you're that size, 5 pounds is a huge difference. That's the difference of being able to drink a bottle of water before every race during the races anyway. And we talked about your muscle before when you were trying to lose the weight to ride. And there is such a fine line for riders for having too much muscle, but you have to be strong. You're dealing with 1,200-pound animals here. What do you do when you're not riding? What do you do when you're exercising to keep that muscle but not gain too much muscle?
Well, I mean, you're never going to have enough muscle to be able to control a 1,200-pound animal. You know what I mean? It's kind of foolish to think that we can control them. You know what I mean? It's a kind of a mutual agreement. I mean, that's the reason why you see horses' babies getting broken. And the good ones that get broken, you can definitely tell when they're broken well and when they're not broken well. Me, for my exercises, it's like more of like a core exercises, you know, abs, back, you know, stuff like that. That's where everything is controlled by, you know. And, you know, for my, like when I mess my hip up and I mess my leg up, you know, they said to, you know, you got to strengthen your core, you got to strengthen your back, and that'll strengthen, you know, your hips. So when I work out, I don't lift any weights. I have a body type that if I do lift weights, I will blow up and I'll get big too fast. So I do very, very light things. I ride my bike, and I do core exercises. You know, we have a chiropractor here, Dr. Sandra Doman, here at Gulfstream Park, and, you know, she's great. Put me on to a wellness thing, and, you know, just foundation building. And like I said, that's all core workouts. It definitely goes into play when you're riding, just for your balance. You're taking a hold of a horse, you know, just settling a horse and stuff like that.
Like you said, Nick, you really can't out-muscle a 1,200-pound animal. And when you see those riders, especially out in the morning, they're what we call skiing on the back of a horse, standing straight up with their arms straight out, trying to slow down this runoff going around the track. And that's just, that's not good. You know, when you see that, that's not good. And you mentioned earlier in the show Valid and the way he would gallop, and he could get tough. And you know that you're not going to out-muscle him. And you mentioned something that I don't know if our listeners know what that means. You mentioned throwing his head away. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I mean, so like I said, it's like you're not going to be able to control a 1,200-pound animal. It's just, like I said, it's foolish to think so. So you got to find a way. And with your hands, like, it's another thing, a term that a lot of, like, the horsemen uses, you know, oh, that rider has good hands, or, you know, he doesn't have good hands, or, you know, his hands fit my horse. Or, every rider is different, every horse is different. So, like, with Valid, I just were learning, like, you know, I get on the track, and sometimes he doesn't want to, like, move, and say he wants to move, and I said, all right, you know what, I got time, you know, you want to do your own thing, so let him do his own thing, and then we start galloping, and, you know, sometimes he wants you, he's like, all right, come on, you know, take a hold, grab a hold of me, and, you know, if you grab a hold of him, you know, he might He's gonna have a really strong gallop. But if I keep my hands down and I'm just very, very light with his mouth, he just coasts along. And he's funny because when he works, like when you have a breeze day, you know, when he's got to work or something, Marcus tells me pick him down the lane or, you know, 2 3/8 or whatever. You know, that was such a professional. You know, you throw his head away, take a nice cross, but then when you're, like, at the half-mile pole, like, he kind of, like, starts getting in gear, and he starts, like, putting his head a little bit down. So, like, he's all right, grab a hold of me. I take a nice hold of him. By the, when you're, like, a 16th pole away from the 3/8, boom, he's ready to roll. And he goes right through the wire, gallops out well, and then he pulls, like, he just, you give him his head again, and he just gallops out, you know. Like I said, I found that he's just an easy horse to ride for me. And like, you'll find a lot of horses like that. A lot of horses that are always trying to fight you against, like, the bit, you know, and braces or anything like that. You know, you just give them their head, basically, what it means, you know, and you just give them their, let them do their own thing. You know, there's trainers, or people have told me, you know, just stay the way out of a horse and, you know, they're going to do most of the running. If you ever pay attention and you watch a loose horse, a horse that gets loose at the gate, or something like that, that loose horse will almost always win the race because it's doing its own thing, you know? And you'll see him go six wide. We watched the race, and a horse got loose. It was like in December or something like that in Gulfstream, and the horse got loose. And the horse, I mean, it stayed pocketed in between horses, never clipped heels, never did anything. You know, when he came in for home, you know, a hole opened up, a loose horse went through, and he won the race. You know, that just goes to show it's like, you know, you kind of got to let the horse do its own thing when they're, you know, when they're that caliber of horses.
Like you said, Nick, good hands. That is so important for a rider to have. And riders get labeled with certain styles of riding. People might refer to a particular jockey, oh, he's a speed rider, or that rider's very patient with good hands. How would you label yourself, Nick? What kind of style would you say you have?
I don't really know if I would label myself with a style. I'm really, right now, I'm trying to establish myself as a jack of all trades. I mean, that's what you want to be. You want to be, I think any rider, you want to be all around. I mean, like I said, I watch Javier in the room. Javier can put a horse in the lead. He can put the horse to sleep. He can sit behind. He can, you know, close all the way from dead last. He can do it all. And when I was in Maryland, I had a very good percentage with 1 mile routes in Maryland, Laurel, because you got to be very, very quiet. I'm watching guys, you know, I'm sitting behind, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 lengths behind, 9 lengths behind when people are thinking, oh, it's time to move. You know, I'm watching guys, and they're moving. But in Laurel, we got that long stretch, you know, so you got to have a little bit of patience and, you know, then wait for your horse to pop the lead. And there you go. Now you're winning the race. Then again, now you go to Mama's Park, or you come to here to Gulfstream, where it's a speed favoring track. Now it's like, oh, I got to get my horse out of the gate, you know, so you got to be able to, you know, in Mama's, like I learned a lot where it's a, you know, the speed favoring track, so you got to get those horses out. But then again, I grew up in Maryland, so like I also know you got to be patient with the horses. So at this time, I wouldn't label myself as either. I want to be both. If somebody puts me on a speed horse, I want them to be confident to say, I'm gonna put Nick on this horse because I know he can get this horse to lead. Or if you're on the grass and you're riding a turf or something like that, and I want somebody to say, I want to put Nick Wallace on my horse because he has very quiet hands and he can be able to, you know, relax my horse. He knows he's not gonna move too soon. You know, so I like to be all of them.
Well said, Nick. As long as you win, right?
That's right. Exactly.
Now, January 11th, 2016 was a very, very exciting day for you. Tell us what happened on that day.
Well, I rode 8 horses that day, and we win 6. I won 2nd and 1/3. And I never won more than 3 races in a day, so it was pretty cool. And I've rode a lot for Hugh McMahon. And, you know, he started me off when I was just an exercise rider. I used to breed a lot of horses for him before I started riding races. And I rode 3 for him that day. And, you know, we won all 3. And so it was really exciting. But I guess it was like I win one, and I win the 2nd one. And I was like, oh, I can win the 3rd. So I won the 3rd. And then, like, the 4th was coming up. I think it was, like, a second-time starter for motion going a mile. And I said, wow, I don't know if this horse is going to win, but know, I'm going to give it my best shot. And this is where it came from. I'm out of the clouds going a mile. And just had an awesome turn of foot. I win that one. And even Dave Rodman, the announcer for Laurel, says, Nick Juarez was his fourth win of the day and two more to go. Two more races to go. And the horse in the next race, for Hugh, we both were kind of unsure, you know, how the horse was doing. I know he was working well, but just wasn't showing too much, you know, in the afternoon, the races. Then that one, busting the wind, comes right out of the gate, boom, and goes right to the lead. And like I said, Laurel lately has always been, you know, you got to come from behind. So these horses, three of my horses that day, won on the lead. Goes to the lead, you know, putting the sleep up there, come from home, that horse wins. Then we had in the last we had the 8-5 shot or something like that. So I said, wow, you know, but they not all 8-5 shots win, obviously. But I said, wow, Hugh. I said, now we won five. I said, I think we might be able to win the next one. He's like, oh, wouldn't that be incredible? You know, and you know, God bless and thank God. And went out in the last horse, Escrow Kid, won the last race. We won six races that day. I wish there was a couple more races that day so we could, you know, beat the record. But we ran out of races on the card.
You ran out of races, Nick. I know they call three victories a hat trick. I don't know what they call six, but that is...
I don't know. Two hats. I don't know.
Maybe two hats. There we go. But how... confidence is so important to jockeys. And when you have six winners, your confidence had to be out the roof. Tell us how that affects your riding, that confidence.
Well, going forward or just that day?
Just that day. As you would win after win after win, how did your confidence level increase?
Well, I mean, like I said, I win the first three, and then when I got to the fourth one, I was like, you know, this one's really my win. But, you know, when, when you're winning, you're winning, you know. I don't like to think of it as a confidence thing, but, you know, you definitely got to be confident in all your rides. But when you're winning six in a day, I mean, obviously you're like, man, this, you know, what am I doing right? Or, you know, sometimes it just happens. Like, the horses run, all six good horses ran on a good day. But, I mean, I like to be confident in all my rides.
And you had those six winners at Laurel Park, and you rode mostly Maryland, New Jersey during the beginning of your career, and then you decided to go to Gulfstream, where the big dogs were. What is the difference between riding in Maryland versus riding at Gulfstream?
I definitely, you know, I love Maryland. I love the horsemen there. I love the riders there. You know, I got, you know, plenty of friends there. But, you know, this is just it's a different caliber. It's a different caliber of horses, different caliber of horsemen, and different caliber of riders. You know, I walk around, I go to, you know, Marcus has his horses and Paul Meadows, and you're literally going there and you're seeing grade one horses, grade two horses, grade three horses, you know, and just all, every type of horse that you can imagine, you know, you're seeing their gallop across the track. You go to Palm Beach Downs and, you know, Pletcher and George Weaver, they're there. A couple other good trainers are over there, and you watch these horses go by, and it's incredible. You know, something I was never around before, and it's definitely something to learn from. You know, that's the horses, and that's the horsemen that I'm talking about. Then you look at the riders. You know, these riders are so professional. I mean, these riders have every reason to be cocky or confident, or, you know, I'm sure they're all very confident, but they have every reason to be cocky or arrogant or anything towards you. And these, I'm telling you, these are the nicest, classiest type riders you're ever going to be around. You know, there's people in places that I've ridden before, and they haven't achieved anywhere near what these guys have achieved. And they're much more high-headed, and, you know, hot-headed and cocky, and they're not afraid to show it. But here, it's a different caliber of people. They're very, 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 very professional.
Jockey Nick Juarez joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nick, we only have about 3 minutes left. Time has just flown by. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Where do I see myself? I would like to see myself as a, you know, as a grade one winning jockey. I would like to win the Preakness just because that's, you know, where I'm from. That's my home. You know, Maryland's my home. You know, I would like to win them all, but, you know, just I'll be happy just to be healthy. you know, have a family, be established, well established in the business, and you know, somebody that people can still call and say, hey, do you want to get on Sirius XM Radio? Hey, do you want to do a show? You know, something where I can still just be remembered, and you know, just be just like I said about these riders down here, be as classy as them, and for somebody to say, hopefully there's a rider a few years from now, 5 years from now, who's only this young in the business, who's achieving this much, and they, I hope they say one day, you know, oh man, I went to Gulfstream, and you know, you ought to see it. I'm around Johnny Velasquez. I'm around Javier Castellano. You know, I'm around Joel Rosario. I'm around Nick Juarez. And you know, for my name to be in the midst of them, you know, that'd be really, really cool. I think that'd be the greatest achievement.
You mentioned having a family, Nick. We can't end the show without mentioning your fiance now, Kara, and you two just recently became engaged, right?
Yeah, actually, funny story. So we've been together since, oh my God, I don't know, 2013, sorry. Since 2013 and Valentine's Day we met. And, you know, she knew me before, you know, when I was just an exercise rider and worked on the farm and stuff like that, she knew me. And I started riding, and she got to see all the struggles that I went through as a as an apprentice, and, you know, agents dropping you and trying to hustle your own book and everything else. And, you know, nobody, like I said, like, it's not an easy business. I, you know, my agent dropped me when I first started my book. You know, nobody wanted to take my book. You know, nobody wanted to give me a shot. And she was always there for me. And I'm so thankful to have her and my father to be there for me. And anyway, so I told her before I started riding, I said, hey, if I ever win a stake, I said, I'm going to, you know, a stake race, I said, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have a ring in my legging, and I'll ask you to marry me in the winner's circle. Not thinking that I would ever win a stake or ever become a jockey. So I won the Island. And I didn't have the ring. I didn't think, you know, that time would ever come. And then that week, I went out and I bought a. I woke up Thursday morning, and you know, I'm gonna buy a ring. Went out, bought a ring. I called. I asked her parents if I could have her hand in marriage. And that Friday, I asked them to marry me. And then it was pretty cool because then Saturday, I won the sapling for Jason Service aboard Sunny Ridge, and then Sunday I won the Lighthouse Stakes for Fletcher aboard Mei Ling, and it all just worked out. It was a great week, and it was like I said, it was right after I lost the bug. So to be able to get engaged, you know, be, you know, win a graded stake, then win two more stakes for prestigious trainers, it was awesome, and you know, you definitely can't count her out.
Congratulations, Nick, and we are all out of time. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
All right. Thank you, Christina. Thank you guys for having me, and hope to talk to you guys soon and see you guys soon.
All the best to jockey Nick Juarez. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.